Radio. The show is Sound Health. I'm your host, Sherry Edwards, and we have Maureen Terry on the line with us, and she's going to talk to us about money. On this show, we attempt to bring you information and ideas that support self-health, whether we talk about our research here that deals with sound and its effect on living systems, or information that just to make your life more enjoyable. We strive to provide lots of avenues of freedom to live your life the way you want. And today is no exception in that mission. We want to provide you, the listener, with information on how to optimize your time on the planet. And we very much appreciate your suggestions and questions and show ideas. And this show was your idea, audience, so thank you for that. And if you have questions about this, you can write to us at soundhealth@soundhealth.org. We're going to be taking calls today as soon as I can find the number. Maureen, you're just one of the authors of Passing the Buck, right?
Right, yes, there was a group of us. We estimate we have something between 50 and 100 years of experience by putting this all together.
Well, I always like to look up at Amazon and see what they're saying about a book. And I looked up and it was like, yikes, she's not the author. So is this a group that got together and made up the name? It's a fascinating Charles Arthur.
Right. Arthur. That's
so,
what we did.
So why did you guys decide to write this book?
This is information that has never been revealed before. The issue of passing on wealth is very sticky business, and it's confusing, and it is one of the major avenues in which the powers that govern us keep the rest of us crippled by keeping us poor. And this is, and they do it through how inheritance is handled. And they also keep their power through how they handle their inheritance, which they don't want you to do, and they don't want you to know how to do it. So
who
this
gave
book,
them the,
pardon?
Who gave them the right to jump in and deal with our death anyway? And who we give our money to. If I want to give something away, why is the government going to be mixed up in the middle of it?
Because you don't know what you're doing, you see. And this book is to make sure you know what you're doing.
So everybody should have a will, or is there just more to it than a will?
Oh, there's much more to it than that. And if I could take this moment to read a quote and to test you and your audiences as to who you think might have said this, I think this will absolutely blow your mind. Okay.
We're ready.
Quote, people are kidding themselves. They don't have the buying power they used to have. A lot of the people living today don't know what the buying power of success was before we decided to use excessive income taxes to punish success and estate and gift taxes to force every generation to start from scratch. Would you like to make a guess who might have said that?
Bush.
No, it was T. Coleman Anders, IRS commissioner, from 1953 to 1955.
The actual commissioner while he was commissioner?
Yes, that's what he said.
Did he get fired?
Yes.
So you don't believe in IRS taxes either? How can we get out of it?
Well, the book, The Art of Passing the Buck, explains how it can be done. It gives you many, many choices. It takes you through the history of how to set up how trusts have been used. It takes you through the history of the world in reference to how people have used trusts to stop the rape pillage of the royals. It takes you through the history to tell you how the Romans used it to pass on wealth to women who had no status, so they had to use a trust to get money to their wives and their daughters. And it takes you through the difference between the setup of a private common law trust and the statutory trust. And we use those two kinds of trusts throughout the book to compare how wealth is kept and how wealth is held and how it can be passed down without going through probate and without having your family ripped apart in the process of fighting over goodies.
And we're all going to die, so we all need to do this.
Not only are you going to die, but you are going to have to live. And it's the living part that we are emphasizing in the book. It's how to pull your family together into one unit, how to turn your family into a business, how to get your whole family on the same page so you're building the same pile of cash for the next generation. And that's what the secret is in the book. That's how we reveal it. We take you through court cases, give you quotes from the IRS and from all kinds of people, such as Frederick Lundberg. Have you ever heard his name?
No.
This is a guy in the 60s. He's a professor of one of the great universities. And he began studying how the rich keep their money. And he wrote a book called The Rich and the Super Rich. And he went into such detail, such as the idea that you need to work for your money and that money ruins you. He proved through his study of the rich that that's totally a lie. And that's propaganda to make the rest of us believe that money is filthy. And anyhow, we have him quoted in our book, and we have done tremendous research on the power of being able to keep the money in your family so that you have the power to, such as, start businesses, to employ people, and use money for the benefit of others.
I love the title, The Art of Passing the Buck. Such a nice play on words. Why do you think, is it just people are not knowledgeable, or are people deliberately trying to keep this information from the public?
Well, there's another book called Dumbing Us Down, written by John Gatto, and he goes into the detail of how making sure that the public doesn't know anything and how they have structured the schooling system to ensure that. And the art of passing on wealth has been not only taken out of the school system, the lawyers do not have the information. And so we wrote this book also to inform the legal profession, to show the laws and to show how it really does work. So this is a book that fills a huge gap, but I think we probably need to go back a little and tell the steps of how to pass on wealth, the very basic steps, so that
let's give people our phone number first. We're going to be taking calls, and this is a great opportunity. Everybody needs to be calling in the show about this one. The toll-free number in the U.S. is 877-876-5227, and in Canada, 888-815-9756, the direct line, 530-876-3222, and if you didn't get this, those numbers, go to bbsradio.com, look on Station 1, and they're all listed there. Okay, let's go back and start at the beginning.
Okay, there's a word called intestate, which means a person dies without a will. And if that happens, the heirs, the children, the wife, whoever is left, has to petition the court for the court to decide who gets the assets that are left over. And if someone with a considerable amount of money dies without a will, this can take years to sort out through a court system. The next thing that a person can do is they can get a will where they name their heirs and they outline what each person should get. But in that case, it has to go to court also, because the court has to authorize the banks and the financial institutions to release the money to the beneficiaries. Then you graduate into a trust system, and the simplest trust is called a living trust. And this can get people out of the court system, because before the person dies, they have the successor trustees sign the documents. So that's a living trust, and so when that person dies, the person who's the successor trustee already has the authority to go to the bank and the financial institutions and get the money and distribute it. On that living trust, what's called a revocable trust, and the person who set the trust up, who is called the grantor, pays taxes on all the money that goes into that trust during their lifetime. The next kind of trust, which everybody should know about, is called a irrevocable trust. There's two kinds of irrevocable trusts. There's statutory and there's common law. The common law trust is set up under Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution, which is the right of contract. And the statutory trust is set up under the laws of the state. In both cases, those trusts occur because the person who's alive starts a trust during their lifetime, transferring the money into the trust to another trustee, and that person who does the transfer of the assets no longer owes taxes on any of the money earned, because an irrevocable trust is an individual. Now, the trick here is that that individual never dies. It can go on for hundreds and hundreds of years if it is a common law trust. If it is a statutory trust, it goes on for approximately three generations and then it breaks up. So I think at this point you're getting the picture of how wealth stays in a family for generations and accumulates through an irrevocable trust.
And do they not pay taxes at all on anything coming into that trust?
That is absolutely true. And the tax laws for those kinds of trusts are very interesting. because the rich set up those tax laws. So they have all kinds of options that a person does not have if they're just living on their own and filing their 1040.
So if I put my paycheck in an irrevocable trust and just pay myself out of that, I don't have to pay taxes? I don't understand.
No, you can't. There's only certain things that you can put into an irrevocable trust, and a paycheck is not one of them. But you can transfer, let's say, in a common law trust, you can actually go into partnership with another business. And then the profits in the business can be given over to the common law trust. And they use what's called pass-through accounting. And that gets a little more complicated than we can get on it.
Okay, Maureen, we have a caller on line one. Could we just hold it there and pick up where we left off? Okay, hello, caller, are you on the air?
Hi, I had a question. You can get those will kits. Is those as good as having to hire an attorney?
Well, I think a will kit is a good thing to go through for yourself. In the Art of Passing the Buck, we give you a tremendous amount of information of what you might want to include in those kits. It's just not so simple to pass on wealth. There's a lot of tricks to know. I would never say not to go to an attorney, but it would definitely be very good to get the kit and study it, because just anything you can do to educate yourself in this arena is always beneficial.
Now, do you feel that there's like an age that there's more important to have your will, or is it just important if you were 18 as it is when you're 50 to have a will?
Well, I don't think we can interest too many 18-year-olds to do it, but...
I mean, or like, I guess, 30.
Yeah, I what happened to a friend of mine is her sister and she inherited a condominium, and my friend was going to live in it, so her sister insisted on her getting, in this particular case, a living trust. But what I'm trying to say is the circumstances dictate about when you should probably put together a will or a trust or anything like that.
Because mine would be, I'm 36 with 3 kids, it would probably be best for me to have a will.
It would probably be best for you to have at least a will. I would recommend that you look into the living trust. That would be a better situation.
Okay.
And then if you get the book, it will tell you if you're qualified for an irrevocable trust. It just gives you all the outlines of everything you need to know about what kind of vehicle you need to put together whatever it is to pass on to your children.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, caller.
All right. Bye.
Okay. Maureen, just go on with what you were saying about...
I can't remember.
We were talking about common law and statutory trusts, and that an irrevocable trust is an individual, and you transfer your assets into it, and then what happens?
Okay, let's just go for a minute with the statutory irrevocable trust, which is usually administered in most cases. Well, I don't know about in most cases, but commonly through a bank, okay? So let's say you have $500,000 and you decide during your lifetime you're going to put it into an irrevocable trust and you're going to go through a bank. And what they would do is they'd invest the money and then they would distribute it to your beneficiaries, whoever you decided to give it to. All right, and then your beneficiaries pay the tax. But your income is reduced by $500,000, and people who do this would probably already have other kinds of income streams, so you would just live on less money, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, in an irrevocable common law trust, you can put your money into the trust. you can be an advisor to the trust. Let's say you put $500,000 into an irrevocable common law trust. There's a system called trust certificates. So you actually have a piece of paper saying that you are entitled to a particular percentage of the income. You can also work for the trust as a general manager, and if the trust owns vehicles, you can drive the vehicles. If the trust has some property that it's holding for the beneficiaries, but nobody else can live in it, I mean, there's nobody living in it, then you could live in it. And you could do all kinds of interesting things, but you don't own anything anymore. And without ownership, you are not liable for, if there's a lawsuit, you don't own anything. And all kinds of interesting ways that you can manage your family now, because the family is part of this trust, so it has an interest.
Can people sue the trust?
They can sue the trust, but they can't sue you, because you don't own anything. I mean, they could sue you, but they wouldn't get anything.
So they can take the assets of the trust?
It's a little harder to do because, first of all, the trust is a person, and the trust isn't doing anything other than having the trustees.
Okay, my next question to you is going to be, how do we keep the banks out of that? And we have another caller, so I'll remember the question. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, my name is Jessie.
Hi.
And my father recently had a scare with cancer,
yes.
And he's been married for 2 years, and his retirement is a 401k.
Yes.
And at the time, he said that he was going to withdraw my sister and I's part of our inheritance because he was afraid if something happened to him that wouldn't come to us. My question is, could she keep us from getting our part of what he wants us to have if he doesn't have a written will?
This is a stepmother?
Yeah, this is a stepmother. Yeah. Yes, that's how we open up our book, The Art of Passing the Buck. The very first chapter talks about that very situation where the father remarried and then after a couple of years died and the new wife inherited everything. And the first thing she did was exclude his children. And it went to court, and there's, you know, that's the basis. That's how we start the book. We do not want this to happen to you. So what should happen is he should do an irrevocable trust right now, name you and your sister as the beneficiary so that she can't touch the money.
Could we then decide to not give her part of it?
Absolutely. It would be your money.
That's a really touchy subject, Maureen. How would you suggest she approach her father about this?
I suggest you get him the book and let him read it. See, that's the thing about the book is when the family starts reading the book, they start coming together on the same page and they realize this is really tricky business, this passing on wealth, and we need to get our ducks in a row, you know? And that's what I would suggest.
Thank you, Paula.
We were talking about common law trust, and is that the way you keep the banks out of it? You keep the law out of it?
Well, it depends totally on the level of education of the members of the trust and the trustees. And one of the things that we emphasize thoroughly is if you're going to get any kind of trust or will or anything, you need to get a tremendous amount of education. But the more sophisticated the instrument that you use to pass on wealth, the more education. So a trust is just a piece of paper. It's the knowledge, the legal knowledge of the trustees who understand how the real system operates and how paperwork is handled and how taxes are filed. That's where the knowledge of how to keep banks and lawyers and the IRS and everybody else out of your trust. And we emphasize that in the book.
So if you put your this brings a thousand questions to mind. So if you put your money from your business into a trust, the business doesn't have to pay taxes?
No. Let's say for a minute that you personally decided to start a business. And let's say your parents had set up a common law irrevocable trust. What you could do is you could go into partnership with the trust, the family trust, okay? And then let's say the partnership is 60-40, and you have the 40 and the trust has the 60. So what would happen is 60% of the profits would go into the trust, and you would have control of the business, and the business would pay all the appropriate taxes and everything else. And then the trust would handle the distribution of the other 60%.
Is there a different rate of taxation for a trust as a person?
The trust operates on what's called pass-through accounting. So you can have any kind of irrevocable trust, statutory or common law, without the trust paying any taxes whatsoever. Irrevocable trust, there's a thing called corpus. Corpus is the original funds put into the trust. Now, here's an interesting trick, and it's all the way through the IRS code, so I'm not making this up. In a trust, let's say you have a home and it's worth $300,000, and you sell it, and you make a profit of $100,000. In a trust, you can decide that the Board of Trustees can decide whether that $100,000 is income or whether that extra $100,000 is corpus. You can actually do this. So you just make this arbitrary decision and you take that $100,000 and you invest it in something. And so you say, well, okay, I don't want that to be income. I want that to be corpus. So therefore, there's no income tax due on that, is there?
Good grief. I'm going to go out and buy a case of these and give one to everyone I know. I have a question here. A lot of our people send in emails, and so we didn't give out that email address, but somebody sent one and said, I'd like to pull my family together in this kind of a trust, but I make so much more than everyone else. How would you deal with that?
Oh, that's a beautiful question, because the irrevocable common law trust and the statutory trust too, but especially the irrevocable common law trust, we address that in the book, and we tell people to find who we call the engine of the family, the person who knows how to make the money, okay, and how to hook that person up to the family so that the whole family gets to experience or gets to share the wealth. The irrevocable common law trust has a system built into it so that the people can, so that the rest of the family can receive the benefits of the strength of that one person.
Okay, Maureen, we have another caller. This is great.
Okay.
We'll come back to this. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, my name is Susie, and I have a question. My father passed away some time ago. My mother invested the money in a trust for her three kids. She just recently remarried. What does she need to do to make sure, or what, I guess, what's going to happen when something happens to my mother?
Okay.
Will we have to now share that with him?
It depends on what kind of trust she set up,
mm-hmm.
and how the words in what's called the indenture or the declaration of trust are written.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a revocable trust, she can change the terms at any time before her death.
Okay.
If it's irrevocable trust and she named you as beneficiaries, then she does not have the right to change her mind. And this is one of the big things we address in the book, this issue of people changing their mind when they get older, because
mm-hmm.
they forget that you're their children. So this is why we say, if you can, always set up your trust as an irrevocable trust.
And then after she dies, it becomes irrevocable anyway because she's dead. So does that answer your question?
It does. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, caller. How do you get money out of or things out of? Because I think you could put property or anything in this common law trust, can't you?
Not quite anything. We have a criteria of why you would want to put something in a trust or not. The best thing to put into a trust is rental property. It generates the biggest income. But you can put cars and you can put vacant land and you can put all kinds of stuff in a trust. Would it be okay if I gave out my our website?
Absolutely.
Okay. Our website is www.passingbucks.com. That's passing, P-A-S-S-I-N-G, bucks, B-U-C-K-S.com. And our phone number is 818-574-6122. 818-574-6122. Okay.
Well, I have lots of questions. Let's say this rental property is probably going to go on for a long time, but a car is about 10 years. How do you move something in and out, or just that just become a dead piece of nothing in there?
Well, a car, wealth is held in many different forms. We all have a tendency to think money, 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 money. The value of a car is greater than the value of its money. I mean, it gets you around. It hauls things for you, right? It's a tremendous asset. Let's say you have a car that's 10 years old, and it's in the trust, and your kid is just going to college, and you say, well, take the car because it belongs to the trust, and you're the beneficiary, all right? And so this person, this child of yours, takes the car and goes to college. All right, so the value of the car is not only just that it gets around, but it's getting somebody around who's getting an education and building a future. So we kind of have to retool our thinking as to what's valuable and what's not valuable. It's not only based on money.
If you put a piece of property in it and the property has a mortgage, does the trust then become responsible for the debt of the mortgage?
There's a couple different ways to do it. Sometimes the person who owned the piece of property can take responsibility legally for the mortgage, and the trust actually pays the mortgage. Okay. The other way is that you put the property in the trust, and if the trustees have a strong enough credit rating, then they refinance the house, and then the trustees take responsibility for the mortgage.
So one of the questions I was going to ask you is what's the biggest mistake people make? And I think the biggest mistake people make is not having your book and not knowing about this.
I love you. Thank you very much. The biggest mistake people make is lack of information. There's a thing out there called a scam trusts. And the two things you have to look out for a scam trust, and they're always about the common law trust. They're not so much about the statutory trust. But the promoter will tell you that you can put your assets into trust and you can remain the trustee. Well, that's not true in an irrevocable trust. You have to give your assets to a board of trustees or another trustee. You have to totally give them away. You have to break all ties of ownership. All right, so you cannot be the trustee of your own stuff in an irrevocable trust. It's not a good thing. You can't do it. And the IRS preys upon you and looks for you and hunts you down because they'll wait for you to have your stuff in trust for 5 or 6 years. And then they'll just go take it because you cannot be the trustee of your own stuff.
They'll take it and nobody questions it?
Who's nobody questioning it? What? You lost me.
The IRS just goes and seizes your stuff? On what basis?
That you cannot be the trustee of your own stuff if it's an irrevocable trust.
And nobody stops them from, do they say, well, that was illegal, so now we're taking everything you own?
Oh, yeah, there's a big, long process that goes through, and then they just go clean you out.
God, that's crazy.
They get very, very rich. The IRS just, you know, comes in and just takes everything. There's several court cases on that.
Can you give us some real simple steps, without giving away your book, but steps, if I want to do a common trust, what's the first thing I have to do?
First of all, if it wasn't for this book, you would kind of be lost, and you would hear about the common law trust from other people who would tell you, oh, this is who you go to, and this is the how you do it. Okay, you have to go to somebody who has the knowledge. This is the only book written on the common law trust in the whole planet, as far as we can tell. So the first thing you would do is you'd talk to people who have one and who have done it. And you'd have to do your own personal research, because the common law trust is under Article 1, Section 10 of the United States Constitution, which is the right to contract. So it's not, the lawyers do not do this kind of trust. They aren't trained in law school about it. They have no background in it. So you have to do it yourself. So you have to find a tremendous amount of information, and then you sit down like you would with any kind of trust. All trusts have what's called a declaration of trust or a trust indenture, all of them. And you have to put it together for your family. And, of course, you don't have much experience in this, so you have to sit with somebody who does. In a scam trust, they sell you a declaration of trust, and it's static. That is, you don't edit it or anything. And a declaration of trust is a very personal thing. It needs to be edited. You need to mull it over. It takes perhaps, in our experience or our collective experience, the average person takes 1 to 2 years to put together an appropriate and proper kind of irrevocable trust. And after
so
that, there's a whole bunch of transfer stuff that you have to do and all kinds of letters that you have to write to surrender your ownership to the trust.
Are you guys who wrote this book, are you consulting with people and helping them do this?
We have experience with doing that, and yes, we do that.
Is this the same number and email that you just gave?
People can call that number, and we can refer them to the appropriate people who do that kind of thing.
Can you give out your website and number again?
www.passingbucks.com. Passing, P-A-S-S-I-N-G, bucks.com. Area code 818-574-6122. 818-574-6122.
Can someone contest your action of setting up an irrevocable trust, like they can contest your will?
Anything can be contested. It depends how much money is involved, how much angst a person has. And it's extremely difficult to contest an irrevocable trust if the trust is set up correctly. One of the common situations in an irrevocable trust of any kind is that the parents have named the beneficiaries, let's say the daughter, and so in this irrevocable trust, the daughter has an income stream of, let's say, $6,000 a month, make it nice and healthy, and then she gets married, okay? And the husband doesn't believe it when he's told before she gets married that it's her money and he can't have it. So he marries her, and then he decides to try to break the trust to get the rest of the money. This is not so uncommon, by the way. He can't get it through his head that it's not hers. Anything in an irrevocable trust, nobody owns it. All right. Nobody. Not even the trustees own the money. It's a situation what's called split title. And so the husband can go to court over and over and over again and sue and try forever to get the money, and he will never get the money. Okay. It just won't happen.
So the trust... Go ahead.
Go ahead.
So the trustees make the decision, okay, there's maybe originally three kids that are the beneficiaries, and then if those three kids have children, they can add them to the trust, but they don't get it by right because they're that child of the originator that got
the
money?
This original indenture, the declaration of trust that the grantor writes, that's where it's set up. The inheritance issues are all handled. And in a statutory trust, it will say the issue of the children of the children, okay, will inherit. And in a common law trust, it will name the specifics of the bloodline of who can get what. Okay,
oh.
This is all laid out in the indenture.
Okay, we have a question came in from the audience that talked about this. A little weird, but I'll read it. My grandmother recently sold her farm, and she's keeping all the money. All of us think of it as belonging to our family, not just to her after Grandpa died. Does she really have the right to sell the farm and leave us nothing? I feel like she sold my inheritance.
Unfortunately, she does have the right to do that, and yes, she did sell your inheritance. And that's the cold, hard truth. And that's why this whole thing with the irrevocable trust is so important and the education of it. She probably is clueless as to the tax implications, the long-range implications. She just probably doesn't have the education she needs to know how to handle money. It's the same thing with people who win the lottery. A tremendous amount of those people lose their friends and all their money within 5 years. It's simply ignorance of how to handle money, how to use it for the benefit of those you love, and she just needs education.
Well, I find it hard to even imagine that this information hasn't come out before. Somebody's really tried hard to keep this from the public.
Oh, yes, they have. I have my latest favorite saying is that the people who are in power keep their power by crippling the rest of us.
Has anybody threatened you over this book?
Oh, yes.
How do you take that?
Let me tell you, we have to get this book out. We need to make sure as many people are as educated as possible. This is why we did it. It's our way of surviving. We have to let everybody know how to pull together, how to build your family, how to hold yourselves together. You absolutely have to know this because there's a government out there that has an agenda, and you're not going to survive it if you don't pull yourself together with your family. And this is what it's really about. This is the training manual. This is the policy and procedure of how to put your family together into one unit to hold yourself together and to survive anything. This irrevocable common law trust has survived since Egypt. And this is so powerful that those who have lots and lots of money, all of them are involved in a trust, several trusts as a matter of fact, that are set up just like these. And in the book, it will explain vested interest. It'll explain exchanging assets and getting certificates in return. It explains administration. It goes on and on and on because our real purpose is to make sure that the people of Earth survive this contest of evolution, you might say, that's going on. And we don't want to see people crippled. We don't want to see broken families. We want to see people holding together. We want to reestablish what you might call the tribal way of looking at things and make sure that if your brother makes a profit, you have a vested interest in his life so that he can share that profit with you. And you can roll down the road into the future holding together, supporting each other. That's the real, real bottom line of this book.
If our producer, Dawn, doesn't invite you to have a permanent show on BBS, I'd be very surprised. And if he doesn't, I'm going to have you on for a series, if you'll do it.
Oh, no problem. We actually have a volume two of how to put together your own trust, and the editing, the final editing ended yesterday, and we'll have that book out at the end of the month.
Are you allowed to tell us who threatened you and how?
What I could do is I can give you some background information, and you can kind of put it together yourself.
Okay.
There used to be a magazine out called Anti-Shyster. Did you ever hear of that magazine?
No.
Anyhow, it's written by a guy who really had it in for the lawyers. And he published that magazine for, you know, several years. And he had a quote in there. He said, "You can threaten the international bankers all you want with anything you want. You can do anything about talking about them or anything. But what you cannot do is you cannot mess with their money. If you threaten how their money is handled, they will kill you." And, of course, that's what happened to Ronald Reagan, because he published the Grace Commission. I don't know if you about know about that, but
no.
The Grace Commission proved that not 1 cent of the money that you give to the IRS goes to the United States. It goes to the international bankers to promote war. You can Google that on the Internet, Grace, G-R-A-C-E, Commission, and Ronald Reagan. You can read all about it. So, okay, then he got shot, right? So you put that together with what I'm telling you.
Okay.
You can figure it out.
Has anyone been taken to task for using this common law irrevocable trust?
Anybody who really knows, well, sure, because the scam trust artist will get you into a bad common law trust, so that's all part of the scramble, right?
But that's not what you guys are advocating.
No, we're not advocating that at all. So we're telling you that you need to do it right. And if you do it right, you cannot be ignorant about what you're doing. You have to know what you're doing. And that's where, because you are going to come eventually up against the power that rules the planet. But if you don't take a stand and you don't hold your family together, I mean, it may be two or three generations down the road before you come to that place, but you need to know what you're doing. You need to set it up right. You need to get clear.
Is it the international bankers who are the controlling factor here?
They own the whole planet, yes. They are the government of the planet.
Wow. I want to read just one review of people who've read this book. I think this one is wonderful and certainly is typical of what's being written about this. "I've read the first 5 chapters 3 times. I'm astounded. I graduated to chapter 6. I got a copy of the U.S. Constitution and read Article 1, Section 10 many times. I found that one so important sentence, 'Congress shall not impair the obligation of contracts.' I'm educating my family about the importance of pulling together and uniting. I am excited." Boy, that says it all. Here's another one. "Although I don't agree with everything in the book, I find it remarkable and fascinating. The condensation of information is remarkable. The footnotes indicate a significant amount of research. Any professional licensed in estate planning should benefit from reading your book." This is from a retired lawyer.
Right.
Probably couldn't say it if he wasn't retired.
Right.
And that brings us to a question from our audience.
Yes.
"How do you find a good lawyer? I've recently been involved in 2 lawsuits. People stole things from my company. We went through 5 lawyers before we found one that just didn't take our money and run, leaving us hanging while doing nothing."
Finding a good lawyer is a real tricky thing, and we handle why it is so hard to find one in The Art of Passing the Buck. It turns out that lawyers, once they get their bar card, are beholden only to the court. They work for the court. They do not work for you. The court is full of politics. And also, they also work directly for the Queen of England, but a lot of them don't know that. So if you find a lawyer who is honest, and they are out there, but I, even though I've worked with two lawyers right now, I'm not,
they're few and far between.
I'm not going to recommend them.
Good lawyers are few and far between. We had a woman here who was keeping two sets of books and skimming money, and even though she admitted to doing it, they wouldn't prosecute her.
Yeah, it takes an awful lot of money to, you know, the whole court system, that's a whole different book, you know.
Well,
I mean, I'll just stick with trust.
In our state, white-collar crime, if they agree to pay it back and they can do a dollar a week, there's no punishment. So you just
we're having a problem in our world called morals and ethics.
Yes.
Huge.
Here's another audience question. Would you talk a moment about reverse mortgages, and is that a good idea?
Well, I'm not an expert on reverse mortgages. We do have one situation in which I've been involved.
What is a reverse mortgage?
It's when you can borrow the money, and when you die, then the property goes to the mortgage company, and they that's how they get payment back on the loan. I'm pretty sure that's how it works. That's how it works with one of them that we're dealing with. Except that in this particular case, the mortgage company really, really blew it because they thought the property was in a living trust. It's not only the lawyers that don't understand irrevocable trust. It's practically the whole world. So what this mortgage company did is the trustee told them that the property was in an irrevocable trust, and the trustee said, I'll happily sign the papers for the reverse mortgage. Well, the mortgage company didn't understand the difference between an irrevocable trust and a living trust, even though it was fully disclosed. And they went ahead without any paperwork from the trustee, and they loaned the money. So we're assuming that at the end, when the grantor dies, we're assuming the mortgage company is going to be looking for their property, and they're going to find out that they never had any paperwork signed, and they can't claim it. They have no claim to the ownership of the property.
We're good Lord.
Kind of like, wow. You know, it's like, wow. I can't believe you guys did that, you know.
One of the things that happened in our company is that we had an embezzlement, and the woman signs what's called a cognovit note for a bunch of money,
uh-huh,
which she then gave to herself as payroll, and she signed my name to it.
Uh-huh.
But she signed my name on a cognovit note, and they came after me. I think people should know what a cognovit note is. Because I think it's important here when we're talking about loans and that kind of thing.
Right.
You know what a cognovit note is?
No, I really don't.
It's a thing that's saying once you sign this paper, they can then represent you in court and be your lawyer should there be any problem.
Oh.
Yeah, and it's totally illegal in personal loans, and this bank knew it and did it anyway. When I wouldn't pay it and proved that it wasn't my signature, they went to court with this cognovit note, told the judge that they were my attorney, and they seized my account. And this is just a dirty trick that they're playing financially, trying to get places like us out of business. And we're an alternative health research facility, and we help a lot of people go up against bad medications and that kind of thing. So.
Oh, you mean you've got your own personal disruptor in your own personal company? Well, you're targeted, so you must be very effective. That's the highest compliment you can get is your own personal disruptor.
That's what our attorney said. And we have an attorney, his name's Ralph Fusatola. He's one of the few ones that are going to end up in heaven.
Uh-huh.
He's wonderful. I'm going to tell him about all of this stuff because he has like 200,000 people interested in alternative medicine and keeping their money so they can do more with it and help. They're thinking about moving out of the country because of the same kind of situation you're talking about. You know,
oh, wait, that isn't going to work. The international bankers own the entire planet. It doesn't matter what kind of currency, they own all of it.
Well, if they...
And running out of the country isn't going to work because the Bill of Rights works in America. It doesn't work in other countries.
Well, they need to know this so they don't have to take that drastic step, and they've got lots of people who are with them and want to help. I was thinking about buying this book by the carton. I think we should buy it by the truckload.
Oh, definitely. I'm all for that because every time somebody gets one of these books, I can breathe a little easier knowing that I'm a little safer.
One of the pieces I liked about the book is not only is it information, but there's stories there to illustrate what's going on. It's certainly understandable by lots and lots of people. We have about a minute left. I can't believe the hour went that quick.
It was enjoyable, I tell you. Go ahead.
Can you, in that last minute, give sort of a rundown of what you have in the book that is useful to people? I mean, trust and...
The biggest thing we have is the issue of mentoring. We try to teach people that if you want to keep your money, you have to do it by educating your beneficiaries. And we give a lot of examples of how to make it work with your children, which are the most difficult people to talk to sometimes. And we talk a lot about your wealth is in passing it on and in accumulating it, and it's through how you communicate with the people you care about. So we talk about all the technical stuff, but we talk about the psychological stuff, passing on wealth. And that's
and they can get the book from Amazon, and they can get it from you. Would you give your website again?
www.passingbucks.com.
And a direct number where they can order the book from you?
818-574-6122.
Maureen, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on.
Thank
and
you.
To our audience, thank you for listening. Run out and buy this book immediately, The Art of Passing the Buck.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Money. Goodbye.